Short and sweet. That's what we've done with this episode of the Vermont Edition podcast. I'm Matthew Smith, producer of Vermont Edition, and I wanted to say thanks for listening, and we hope you enjoy.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. You drive around Vermont and soak in the view, the lush green mountains, dense forests, the rolling pastoral landscape. And then you pass a yard that proudly displays every car the family ever owned going back to the early 60s. An amazing collection of old ovens, fridges, washing machines, and other appliances that almost belong in a museum, if not for all the rust and grime. So, is that a junkyard? According to Vermont law, it could be a salvage yard that needs to be registered. It could also be an eyesore to the neighbors. And towns around the state are often grappling with whether or not to pass ordinances or change bylaws to regulate what's visible in people's yards. As recently as this month, the Pownall Select Board met to discuss a proposed junk ordinance to regulate salvage yards, waste disposal, and junk vehicles. But hold on a minute. Why should the state or your town have a right to tell you what you're allowed to keep on your own property? Today on Vermont Edition, we're going to listen back to a conversation we had on this topic back in 2015. We spoke with Karen Horn, who was and still is the Director of Public Policy and Advocacy for the Vermont League of Cities and Towns, and with Mark Roy, Environmental Program Manager with the Agency of Natural Resources. We started the conversation by asking how we make the distinction between what's junk and what isn't, and where different towns draw that line. Here's Karen Horn.
Well, there are definitions in statute, and Mark can maybe talk to that, about what is a salvage yard and what is a junkyard, or what junk is, excuse me. There's a lot of variation around the state in terms of people's tolerance levels for junk, particularly when neighbors are concerned. I will say that this is a really hot-button issue. In the last 2 days, I sent out an inquiry to towns asking about their regulations. I got 43 responses, and there are an additional 44 registered salvage yards that aren't in any of the towns that responded. So clearly, this is a big issue across the state.
Mark, what do the state laws say?
The state law has a very, very broad definition of salvage yards. It's kind of scattered in a couple different places, but basically it's outdoor storage of junk materials, including an automobile graveyard. An automobile graveyard is at least 4 unregistered cars stored on site for more than 90 days, cars or vehicles. So you can see that's very broad, and it brings a lot of properties to our attention.
And so what does one have to do to have a state-sanctioned salvage yard?
The statute requires that, first of all, a salvage yard has a local permission, a certificate of approved location. So they have permission from the town to conduct that activity. Once they get that, then the state issues a permit. And we will not and cannot issue a permit if they don't have local permission.
So, Karen, what does that mean then for a town? Are they likely to grant permission to someone who says, I would like to have a regulated salvage yard?
Most of these salvage yards are pre-existing, so the town, if the owner was going to come and ask for permission to be regulated by the agency, which is sort of not an intuitive action, the town would, I suspect, grant that permission. They might put restrictions on the location, how much that place could grow. I think there's also clearly a lot of junkyard salvage yards that are flying under the state's radar because they're not on that list.
So let me ask you, though, when we just sort of step back from the rules and talk about what we're trying to create here by regulating what people can have in their yard. Some of it is environmental, and we'll get into some of that. But why do towns have the right to tell property owners you can't have that much stuff visible in your yard?
Well, the authority goes way back, and towns can regulate either through zoning or through a standalone ordinance. And zoning is really where your right to do what you want on your private property meets the public's right for an expectation of a safe, clean, and healthy environment. That's the basis of zoning.
Yeah, but safe, clean, and healthy. So leaving aside, as I said, we'll talk about this later, if somebody has, you know, fridges or cars that are actually leaching into the ground, that's a problem environmentally. Mm-hmm. But if my neighbor has all kinds of stuff in his yard and I don't like to look at it, but I'm not going on his yard, what's not safe, not clean, or unhealthy about that?
Well, they can frequently be a nuisance. They can be attractive to children, to animals. There are lots of those kinds of issues. They can be too close to the road and obstruct traffic or visibility. There are all kinds of issues that can arise. And for a lot of these, you don't really know what's there, what kinds of fluids are leaching out of machinery or vehicles or anything like that.
Mark, is a lot of this, though, about aesthetics and maybe even about class? I mean, a lot of what we're talking about here are just things that are visible to the yard. So a lot of the laws say if it's in a garage or in a barn or behind a fence that is not visible, then it's not a problem. People can have what they want. So are we just basically regulating aesthetics?
The state regulations, Jane, are focused on environmental and human health threats.
Yeah, I don't mean state. I mean just, you know, think about it generally. What are we doing?
I can certainly say in our experience, we have over 200 active complaints registered in our system right now, and they vary quite widely. We have had a number that are absolutely legitimate complaints, large-scale salvage operations, lots of vehicles being crushed or dismantled, and so with all the fluids that are possible in a vehicle, there's certainly an environmental threat. We have the far other end of the gamut as well, where there might be a few cars, a lot of household refuse, collector's items, yard sales gone wild, whatever. And those are in our system as well, which we have to respond to. But as we triage and determine where we're going to concentrate on resources, those types of properties pose a less of an environmental and human health threat. So they get way down on our radar screen.
We've been getting a lot of comments coming in already on Facebook and on our webpage. Chris says, this is a tricky subject for sure, but I know several places in Brattleboro I drive by that are looking more like a dump than a house. When a car has been rusting for what looks like a decade plus, it makes little sense that there is any value left. I wish that car had been sent to the salvage yard where it could be made into a new car and recycled. We had a different Chris who also posted on Facebook saying, I think it's entirely dependent on the property's zoning. If it's a rural residential property, I believe the landowner has whatever right to do with it they see fit. Daniel suggested on Facebook, build more barns, easy. And Holly in Bristol says, a few old cars is one thing, but when their property, their home, their dwelling looks like the state landfill, it's not just an eyesore, but a health concern and an environmental hazard that needs intervention. Elizabeth also points out that water collects in the stuff, which then becomes a mosquito breeding ground. But Donna has a different perspective. She says, junk is beautiful. I moved to Vermont to get away from snobby people who think they can tell me how to keep my own yard and property. And Kristen says, how does anything in anyone's yard harm others? My opinion is it's just a bunch of snooty transplants who don't like to see anything but order and make sure that property values are not affected. I used to love my home state because it was about staying out of other people's business and minding your own. Well, let's talk now with somebody who has to deal with this in her own town. We're joined by town and zoning administrator in Highgate, Heidi Britch-Valenta. She talks to a lot of property owners, and we've asked her to share a few thoughts on what might motivate the people in her town to keep stuff around while other people think it's just junk. Heidi, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much for having me.
What are the actual rules in Highgate?
Well, Highgate has had an ordinance on record for quite a while, which manages disposal of all solid waste, and it does speak to junkyards, auto graveyards. And it was the beginning, I think, of trying to put some balance to this issue that we struggle with because of the type of our residences. And I think most of these issues have been mentioned already, but we're a rural town, so we're still predominantly agricultural, and historically, you just don't part with resources. And a lot of farms are passed down from generation to generation. And people went through the Depression and knew that a piece of metal was very valuable, and so it should be tucked away for later use. It shouldn't be parted with. And so I think that's coming into play in some instances.
What about people who keep scrap metal around? You mentioned that sometimes it's because they actually want to sell that scrap metal, but not yet.
Well, it's my understanding that the market for metal fluctuates like other commodities, and some farmers do generate different pieces of metal, or not just farmers, but other people that maybe do manage vehicles. So I think after a long winter of no one bringing any metal in, the price elevates in the spring, and that's a prime time to get rid of your stockpile of metal. So they may be holding on to it for those most valuable times.
You mentioned that in a lot of ways this is an issue about culture and the way people have been brought up, that you don't get rid of anything that might be useful later on. Do you think this is a class issue and a culture issue?
Well, it's certainly a perception issue, and I think that's probably the intent of zoning, is to strike that fine balance between protecting property values in a development that might be in somewhat close proximity to a very different type of business, whether it be a farm or someone who works on cars out of their home. And so we've recently rewritten our zoning bylaws to give different categories to home businesses. And as you said, a junkyard really isn't an issue until it becomes visible. So there are home businesses that are allowed to operate without any evidence visible to from the road. So, you know, I think that that's an interesting topic, that this may come to be more of an issue when it is on the front yard, and it is a detraction. But as was mentioned, there is also the health issue, and I think what we have to focus on is when a neighbor is becoming a risk to those around them.
That's Heidi Britch Valenta. She's Highgate's Town and Zoning Administrator. Heidi, thanks for being on the program.
Thank you very much.
We are talking about junkyards and junky yards today. We got a note from Bill in Cookeville who says, you guys doing a little yard shaming today, a little bit of keeping up appearances on Vermont Edition. I take the point, Bill, but we're trying to also examine what this says about us as a culture, why we're trying to balance neighbors' rights, property values, the ability for homeowners to do what they want on their own property, and how towns are trying to take some measure of this and find some common ground. Andrew Smith, who's on the Reigate Select Board, he says, in Reigate, we attempted to address one of these junky yard issues a few years ago. We took the individual to court and won a court order for the yard to be cleaned up. When again nothing happened, we went back to court. The individual was found in contempt and again ordered to clean up. When he failed to meet the court-ordered deadline, we attended his contempt of court hearing. After hearing the individual's tale of why he could not get rid of the junk, the judge turned to us and said, well, Reigate, he can't pay your fine because he has no money. He won't clean up his yard, and I'm not going to put the guy in jail because his neighbors don't like the way he keeps his place. So, case dismissed. Andrew Smith says it was both funny and frustrating that a man with no money, no legal representation, and virtually no education was able to stop the system simply through determination. If the state is serious about letting municipalities solve these issues, simply making it possible for us to attach the fine to a property tax bill would end the matter. Pay the fine or clean up the yard or tax sale. Mark Roy, what do you think about that possibility? I know taxes aren't your department, but what about the state making it easier for towns?
That is an interesting question and a good one. I'm not quite sure at all of the answer. The court system is separate. It's from the administrative section of the environmental department where I work. And so weighing in on that's a little tough for me. We've certainly seen some creative attempts in towns to get compliance with the salvage yard rule or to get properties cleaned up. We've seen We have an instance that we're working with some folks up in the Northeast Kingdom where it's a watershed group that's trying to and is actually having a lot of success in working with a property owner to get things done, you know, with very similar circumstances, poor health, reduced means, and so forth. So there are some creative ways out there, I think, but there's also some very, very real problems when it comes down to a property owner not having the means or the desire, and without there actually being a very, very real threat to human health and the environment, it's really difficult to get that resolved.
Let's get a couple more calls in here, and then, Karen, I want to bring you back in. Brian's on the line with us from Montreal. Hi, Brian. Go right ahead.
Hi. I want to raise an issue that may be urban but may not be exclusively to the city. I'm a professional engineer with a specialty in timber construction. That was an oddball thing to choose when I started profession 50 years ago, but it alerted me to the kinds of wood which you need to really build a good house and what you can get in the market as my life progressed. I've noticed, and it's something many people not realize, that the quality of the timber we harvest has gotten worse and worse because we chopped down all the big trees. So once, a few years ago, my local shopping center was discarding all the 16-foot 2x3s that had used to support a roof. They were not in all naily. They were perfectly beautiful shape, and they'd come from 50 years ago. I saw, here's a kind of wood I can renovate my roof with. It'll match the 1950 wood in there. Everything will work like hunky-dory. So I salvaged it. My neighbors, who don't share my insights, just complained to a bylaw officer, and on 20 minutes' notice, I had to discard it all at my own expense. One of the things, at least here in Canada, is we don't have a way of raising consciousness of the people who complain to the perspective of those who have another cultural and economic interest. And I'm wondering if that's always the case in Vermont, because in here in Montreal, we don't know who complained. We have no response to the bylaw officer, but yes, sir, three bags full. And in my case, it was an irreparable loss. There's no way to replace those 16-foot, 50-year-old 2x3s that I can never buy because they're not on the market.
Yeah, Brian, thanks for the call. So, Karen Hearn, what about that? I mean, there is a case often where it's sort of a neighborly dispute and it goes to the town, but the person whose yard is being complained about may not know who's doing the complaining, which is probably in many cases a good thing. But what about Brian's point of trying to have more conversation before we take it to, you know, to the town officials?
Well, it certainly is and can be an emotional issue and a cultural question of, is this junk or is it yard art or is it a valuable commodity? I will say that there's a whole lot more process in Vermont, any way you slice it, than there seems to have been up in Montreal. But there are these situations where I would say it's junk that was yard art that got away from someone. In Heartland, if I could just take a moment to describe the situation, they had a junkyard, and they wrote $40,000 in fines for that yard. They didn't get any payment. They went to court. They got an order to clean up the property, same as in Reigate. They didn't clean it up, so the town actually cleaned it up to the tune of $55,000. And it wasn't a small situations. It was a bad situation. They took 258 tons of mixed solid waste off of that property, as well as over 50 junk vehicles and 500 tires. So sometimes what starts out small just grows. We also heard a number of cases where the owner made efforts to clean up the property, and then a few years later, things start appearing again, and they sort of can't stay on top of it. So,
we are talking today about what happens when stuff accumulates in people's yards, how that's regulated by towns, and what might be going on that somebody wants to keep a lot of cars in their yard, or as we heard from Brian in Montreal, some timber that he's going to use for a project. So what are the rules? What are the rights of property owners and the rights of townspeople and town officials? We're talking about all of that today. We're taking stock as well of our cultural perceptions and what we value in our communities. Lots of notes coming in. James in Northfield says, there are a couple of properties that are considered junkyards in this town. Both are illegal. The town claims the one on Houston Street was grandfathered in, though nobody's seen documentation, and the owners have never applied for a permit with the state. Town bylaws clearly state that junkyards in the town of Northfield are prohibited, but the town still allows this. The state has been to the property and the owners were told they need a permit. It's a step in the right direction. One of my concerns is what's going to be done about the other 20 or 30 cars that are spread all over the property that aren't in the fence, and who will regulate this when the town won't respond to your emails and clearly doesn't abide by its own bylaws. Gmail says, I love to see houses and yards that have stuff, kids' toys, swings and wading pools, old cars or parts of cars, dwarves, frogs, Santas and gardens, shrines, art, flags and piles of rocks. It's all stuff of people's lives and fun and interesting to see. Unless there's a public health or safety worry, I think people should be able to do and keep whatever they want in their yard or on their land for work, play, art, or just because. Towns might consider helping people move stuff away who want to, rather than making them pay a fine. Today we're listening back to a show that first aired in 2015, looking at Vermont's junk and salvage laws. The tensions between an individual's rights as a property owner and a community's quality of life, and the ordinance put in place aimed at preventing people from accumulating a yard full of stuff. We spoke with Karen Horn with the Vermont League of Cities and Towns and Mark Roy with the Agency of Natural Resources. In a moment, we'll hear from Middlebury Police Chief Tom Handley about why law enforcement is sometimes involved in this issue. But first, we'll get back to the show with a call from Jackson in Orange, who shared why he keeps a yard full of old cars.
Hi. I've got a yard full of like 27 cars. They're trucks and cars. They're antiques. They're all antiques, and I don't sell parts off of them. And I'm an artist, so I consider them art. I place them in certain ways. A lot of people like how they look. Some people hate how they look. I've been here 21 years from Bridgeport, Connecticut, and I just love it up here. You know, I'm visible on the main highway, 302, which is an interstate. I still consider my stuff as art. And when a state authority was here, and I siphoned all the gas out of my tanks, and he said the oil was negligible, the damage it does to the ground. He didn't have an issue with that. And he also said, well, you're not really a salvage yard because you don't sell any parts. And my washing machines are parts machines for the washing machine I've been running for 20 years, an old Maytag I have parts machines for. So, I mean, that's what I have to say. I like it like this. I like yards with cars in them. I think it's artistic. I think it's beautiful, really.
And, Jackson, no problems then from the town or from neighbors. You feel like you're fine, you know, and you're fine and people like you.
I have a bunch of new neighbors that moved in from down country that absolutely despise me, but they're new. I mean, at least I don't have a pig farm yet, and they put up microphones, and they're taking me to court for playing my trumpet. I'm a musician, so that's how they're trying to get back at me. But the cars, the state, two state authorities have been here about the cars, and they said no problem because they are antiques. They do have value. If I sell anything, it'll be an entire car, and they are for sale for a high price. Like that, but I don't take parts off of all the gases out of the tanks. And
yeah, Jackson, I got it. I hear what you're saying, and I really appreciate you calling in. It sounds like certainly an interesting place you've got there. Let's go to Jim, who's on the line with us from Williston with a different perspective. Hi, Jim. You're on.
Yes. Thank you for having me on today. I'm just calling in regards to trying to sell a home in Grand Isle for about 5 years. That was a beautiful place, great neighborhood. But with only one-acre lots, having a neighbor next door who had a tractor-trailer truck parked and buried in the backyard with various boats and tractors and fishing shanties, all on one-acre property, was a deterrent to trying to sell my home, as many people expressed when they came and looked at my home. I tried to go through the system, went to the town, and nothing was ever alleviated from it. And fortunately, 5 years later, I was able to sell my home, but it depreciated the value of my home quite considerably in order to sell it. So this is a concern that I carried for many years, and I'm glad to see that you're on top of it trying to discuss how we can improve this system.
Jim, thanks for your call. I really appreciate hearing about that as well. We got a note from Harriet who says, how do you deal with a neighbor who stores a rusting out car because of sentimental attachments next door to a beautiful, well-kept lakeside home? It's against the local ordinances, but you become the bad neighbor if you file a complaint. Is there any way for cities to inspect for such infractions? Karen Horn?
Well, it depends on the ordinances that they have on the books. Generally, the first thing that towns will look to do is provide screening from properties But it really does depend. It could be a nuisance. It could be a zoning violation too close to the property lines. There's a number of considerations.
We got a note from Nuclear Waste who says you can call Casella or Waste Management, rent a dumpster, hire a service to remove your junk. An individual does not have the right to create a mess and expect others to pay for the cleanup. I think commenting there on, Karen, what you had said earlier about the town winding up being on the hook for paying for reparation to the land that had been damaged environmentally.
Well, The issue there is that a lot of people who have junkyards or have a lot of and junkyards are not trash. That's a entirely different category, which I hopefully don't have to get into today. But they can't afford to get their junk taken away. It's not cheap, as we saw from those prices that I mentioned. But so. Then does the town come in and clean it up, or is there somebody else that owns a salvage yard that might be interested in those items and take them away? It's not an easy nut to crack.
We're going to be talking in just a moment about enforcement and speaking with the chief of police in Middlebury. The police have to deal with this in Middlebury and go and try to enforce the town ordinance there. But before we do, let's go back and see if we have John on the line with us from Newport. Hi, John. Go ahead.
Yes. Well, I don't think this is a police matter, but I also think that everyone should mind their own business, like in Hank Williams' old song, mind your own business, because if you do, then you won't have any problem. But the main thing is, if you don't like your neighbors, move. It's simple. I mean, you don't have to stay there. There's no law requiring you to stay there. And I don't see any reason that we have to worry about our neighbors, and we should not get all upset because they have a car in the yard or trailer or a refrigerator or whatever. It's no problem.
So, John, when you hear somebody like Jim who called in a couple minutes ago and said he was trying to sell a house up in Grand Isle and it was difficult for him to move, it was difficult for him to sell, and he heard from potential buyers that part of it was because of all of the stuff in a neighbor's yard. So what would you say to somebody like Jim?
I'd say you have to bite the bullet and move and do the best you can. That's all you can do. Because everybody that lives in Vermont should have the freedom to do what they want with their own property. And I think the lot size should remain 10 acres, and it should have never been reduced, because that gives everybody the privacy they need.
Well, John, I appreciate your perspective. Thank you so much for calling in. I got a note from Federico who says, it is outrageous what some people do in their yards in the name of so-called freedom. The reality is that people should be dealt with to the full extent of the law. This is the result of ignorance and hoarding and a danger to public health and safety on top of the environmental damage. Really interesting to see a lot of perspectives coming in here as we have this conversation. Karen and Mark, sit tight. I'll get back to you, I promise. But let's bring in now Tom Hanley, who is the chief of police in Middlebury. Chief Hanley, nice to have you on the show.
Good afternoon.
So why are the cops involved in Middlebury?
The town enacted an ordinance about 9 years ago after significant debate, I might add, about junk. And they limited the ordinance to only certain high-density residential areas of town. One is in the old village area of Middlebury, and one is a section in East Middlebury, and the rest of the town is not covered by this. And, of course, any ordinance enforcement goes to the local police department.
Do you think that's a good way to do it, to have the police department enforce the local ordinances?
Well, there really isn't anybody else to do it, so it defaults to us. We enforce dog ordinances and all kinds of things, too. So our ordinance is structured fairly well, so there's some of the things I heard about anonymous callers and things. Those things are dealt with in the ordinance.
So is this just a civil issue, though, or can it become criminal in Middlebury?
Well, it started off as a criminal issue, and the recent amendment to the ordinance this past year made it a criminal enforcement. We realized these things don't belong in criminal court.
So it made it a civil enforcement?
It's civil enforcement now.
So let me ask you this. When you have to go and talk to people about this, what's that interaction like? I can imagine that people are not particularly pleased to see a police officer show up and tell them they've got to clean up their yard.
Well, the police don't initiate it. The town doesn't initiate the complaint. It has to be from what we defined as an interested person, a person who can see the offending property from their property. It can't be a passerby. It can't be just somebody from the other side of town. it's got somebody who was actually affected by the condition of that property. The police don't initiate this. We don't have any authority to do that. So that person has to come in and give us, we have a pre-form statement that they can fill out. We take that, and then we put the person on notice that there's a complaint about junk in their yard. We validate what the conditions are and give them 30 days to take care of the problem.
Well, Chief Hanley, thank you for telling us a little bit about how it works in Middlebury. Appreciate your perspective on this.
Thank you.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Today we're listening back to a show about junk, or treasure, why some people accumulate lumber, old cars, and other items in their yards, the economics involved, the utility of keeping old machines around for spare parts, and the ordinances involved when one person's collection of useful stuff becomes seen as a pile of useless junk to one's neighbors. Let's get back to the conversation with Mark Roy from the Agency of Natural Resources and Karen Horn from the Vermont League of Cities and Towns. We'll return with one of the many listener comments we read during that show.
PMT says, good luck passing any sort of blight ordinance. Private property overrules anything else on people's minds. Just drive down Route 4 in Windsor County and what passes as a yard sale is a permanent fixture. Never mind what is behind those buildings on private property. It's way beyond a few old cars. In most states, these sites would qualify as open dumps from before the days of landfill regulations. Why should we have to pay for and follow recycling regulations on a few bottles and cans when these residents throw everything in the backyard with no consequences? Kathy in Royalton says, most of us have had some experience with things piling up, getting out of control. Then you have the personal pride, a good thing mostly, of Vermonters not wanting to ask for help. And some people lack the ability, whether physical strength, money, a truck, etc., to clean up their properties. Kathy says, is there a group that folks in need of helping hands could turn to for help? Karen Horn is with us. She's the Director of Public Policy and Advocacy for the Vermont League of Cities and Towns. Do you know of anything like that, places where people can turn to if they just need some help?
I can't think of anything offhand other than the Salvation Army, or sometimes the American Veterans will pick up stuff in some states. I don't know if that's active in Vermont, but I would really be just guessing.
You know what I also hear, though, from town and town officials who know a lot of their residents is that they do try to help, and they try to come up with a solution that works for the resident, the homeowner, and for the town, that often these are ongoing negotiations, ongoing discussions, and despite what the parameters of the rules might be, often towns are trying to work with the people who live in their towns to make things turn out for the best.
Well, that's very true, and you have a number of these situations where towns and the property owner have been in conversation for decades, and a lot of it seems to be explanation that, you know, that junk car has antifreeze in it, and that's going into the ground, and it can get into the groundwater supply, and so a lot of times when you get that kind of information out there, it sort of puts a different light on, you know, is this just yard art or is it something that really should be dealt with from a safety perspective?
Let's go back to the calls. John is on the line with us from Royalton. Hi, John. Go right ahead.
Hi. Thank you, State, for taking my call.
Sure.
As far as I'm concerned, we have no right to despoil land just because we own it. I live next door to a guy that's got just tons of junk. Tires filled with water, mosquito problems, and my water table is right next to his as far as my well goes. And I was told there was nothing we could do about it. It's simply not regulated. And for a state as pristine as ours is supposed to be, where we don't even have any road signs or billboards, I find it incomprehensible that people are allowed to collect junk. I'm talking about junk that's not useful. It's obviously not useful. Paint cans, tons of paint cans underneath the trailer, you know, a tractor trailer, sitting right on the main highway.
John, thanks for your perspective. I hear it, and I hear that frustration and a tinge of anger in your voice over this. I appreciate you calling in. We got a note from Steve, who posted on Facebook, when failing to dispose of junk means you're in effect using your property as a waste disposal site, then that property should be subject to waste disposal regulations. Waste that's accumulating and leaching into the soil affects groundwater and surrounding properties. Mark Roy is our other guest here in the studio today. He's the Environmental Program Manager with the Agency of Natural Resources. Mark, I'd love for you to address some of the environmental concerns that can be an issue when we're talking about people keeping things, especially things like vehicles or appliances that might have chemicals in them.
Right. Well, Jane, the primary threat from vehicles on a property are the fluids. They're besides gasoline, you've got oil, transmission fluids, antifreeze. You might have sodium azide in airbags. So there's a number of problems that can all cause serious environmental problems. Groundwater is a very heavily utilized resource in Vermont. A lot of people have private wells, and a neighboring property, it's not uncommon that the contamination would move from one property to another. So certainly, from our perspective, those are the main things that we're looking at. Other types of materials maybe don't have the same type of environmental threat, but there may be human health threats as well, especially with standing water and the advent and more and more occurrences of West Nile viruses and other communicable diseases. That is certainly a problem as well. So tires certainly raise the bar in terms of how we're going to look at a property. Well, for the most part, those environmental threats are what we're looking at, and the threat to human health. And when you have a property that maybe doesn't reach that standard, again, from the state perspective, it's a lower priority for us to try and work with that property owner to get compliance.
Let's hear from a few more people who have thoughts on this. William's with us from East Montpelier. Hey, William, go right ahead.
Hi, thank you. I'd like to point out that this isn't just a present-day problem. My wife and I have lived on a farm in East Montpelier for almost 30 years, and for approximately 60 years before that, the tenant farmer took in trash because it brought in some income. Trash being things we've turned up, old farming implements, skates, sled runners, pails, lots of glass, and it could be a lovely and usable piece of land, which we could use, but it's difficult to mine that kind of stuff out, especially glass, let alone the chemicals. This Vermont these days is not the Vermont of 50, 60 years ago. And I have a hard time hearing people say that it's none of your damn business what I do with my land. It's not just your land. It's your children's land. And if your children grow up just like you and have hundreds of paint cans under your tractor trailer truck, I don't know what to, that's fine. But it's not fine. You know what I mean?
Yeah, William, I hear you, and I appreciate that perspective, and certainly a different perspective than what we've been hearing. Somebody who's moved onto a property and found that the previous owners had stuff in their yard, junk in their yard, and a problem with that. Bob says, just sort of a little bit of a reminder about language here almost. He says, just because a town makes an ordinance that claims that vehicles on the property are junk if it's not registered and inspected, doesn't actually make it junk. Let's go to Sylvie Ann, who's calling in from Middlebury. Hi, Sylvie Ann. Go ahead.
Hello. Yes. I do live in Middlebury in an area that doesn't have any stringent zoning, although it could happen someday because many developments are coming nearby on 1 acre of land or less. I have 3 acres surrounded by woods, and I have neighbors who are not directly visible to me that I notice have a lot of junk in their yard, but I find it natural and human. It is the thing that people do, and some people are not able to move their old cars out of their yard, and I don't know. I think we are a steward of our environment, but education should be the first step towards solving those issues rather than enforcement. Enforcement is very difficult, as we heard before, from the gentleman who didn't have any money, even in contempt of court. So what to do? Talk to your neighbor, talk about your concern, and see if some other neighbors are concerned equally, and perhaps together we can help that neighbor clean up. I am for peace, and the quality of life depends a lot upon peace. People that are angry and antagonistic are not going to get anywhere, I think.
Sylvie-Ann, you're joined in your comment by John, who says neighbors and town officials should use the gentle touch in dealing with someone else's property. A bit of diplomacy will settle most disputes. And let's hear from Ken in Ticonderoga. Hi, Ken.
Hi there.
Hi.
I've got a semi-junky yard, but it's wildflowers and ground clover as opposed to a monoculture lawn that needs fertilizers and Roundup and the rest of it. And yeah, I've heard some grumbling, but I got a lot of beautiful wildflowers, a stand of sunflowers. Looks good to me. I see it as something entirely different. For the folks that are complaining about, you know, a guy collecting cars like off of 302, that gentleman, you know, mm-hmm. You should look where you're going to move before you move. You shouldn't buy it out of a real estate catalog. You should go take a look around, see if you're going to be comfortable in the neighborhood. It'd be like buying a house at the end of a runway and then complaining about airport traffic.
Well, Ken, I can't see the problem with wildflowers, but I guess, you know, different neighbors and different communities have different ideas of what standards should be kept up. I appreciate your call. Karen Horn and Mark Roy, we've now talked for an hour, and, I mean, the calls are still coming in. People still want to comment about this issue. Clearly, it is something that people think about. And, Karen, you mentioned that, you know, 42 town officials wrote back to you when you sent a note out saying, what do you do in your town? How do you see this? How do we find some kind of common ground?
Well, I do think it is important to mention that there was a law passed in 2009, and it actually defines junk and salvage yards. So it's not entirely whimsical when a municipality or a state official starts investigating a particular property. So I wanted to make that point. But a lot of this is conversation between neighbors. Towns have expended a lot of money and effort sometimes to secure court orders, to have conversations over time with residents about their properties. And it's frustrating when you can't get results on both sides, most likely. But I hear about the town side of it.
That was Karen Horn, Director of Public Policy and Advocacy for the Vermont League of Cities and Towns, and Mark Roy, Environmental Program Manager with the Agency of Natural Resources, speaking on Vermont Edition back in 2015. After we first aired our show about yards and junk and an accumulation of stuff, we got a lot of feedback. The perennial issue for town officials and disgruntled neighbors about what constitutes junk, especially when it's sitting in public view, really struck a chord. The comments and emails kept coming, so to sort through the mailbag, maybe the junk mail bag, is producer Matthew Smith. Hey, Matt.
Hi, Jane. We heard from Tom, who posted on Facebook, "This points to the larger issue of individual rights trumping societal responsibility. There needs to be more of a focus on how an individual's behavior impacts the greater society. One must accept one's responsibility to others."
And Ingrid, a real estate broker in Saxton's River, who writes, "I see how being next to a property filled with junk and debris is a detriment to selling. I like the fact that in my village, people have a reasonable tolerance for some peeling paint and weeds in the yard, but it can go too far in the other direction. There is a greater tolerance for junk in yards in rural parts of Vermont, where people tend to live on larger parcels. Villages and towns, not so much, and I think that makes sense."
And a listener going by the name In the Flood Zone posted, "I can't help but have the thought that many Vermont transplants have moved here the same way some people get married, overlook the obvious flaws, and vow to change the other person once you've made the commitment."
Robert in West Paulette posted to Facebook, "I think if Vermont says billboards are an eyesore, then excess junk in people's yards is an eyesore too and needs to be addressed."
And John says, "Here's a thought. You pay your taxes, you own your land, you live on your land, and you have your possessions on your land. End of story."
Lori in Moncton posted this on Facebook. "I'm always struck by how many complainers haven't bothered to speak directly to their neighbors. It's amazing how face-to-face conversation and listening can lead to understanding, if not a resolution. While I'm sympathetic to the issue of property values, if it isn't a health hazard, perhaps it's incumbent on the complainant to screen their own view."
And Kim made a connection between this topic and another issue. She writes, "Hoarding is a mental illness, and there are different degrees of that problem. I think that resources should be made available to help people get rid of stuff while trying to keep it out of the landfill. More swap shops or reuse zones should be available, and education and support go a longer way than complaining.
We always want to hear your thoughts on our shows, whether it's a rebroadcast from a few years ago or a new show that aired this week. You can leave a comment at vpr.org or post a note on the VPR Facebook page.
And you can always email your thoughts to vermontedition@vpr.org. Thanks, Jane.
Thanks, Matt. And that's it for today. Our show is produced by Rick Singeri and Matthew Smith. Our show's directors are Mary Engish, Jake Rusnak, and Mary Carol Maganzini. VPR's digital producers are Meg Malone and Elodie Reed. And our theme music was composed by Grace Potter and the Nocturnals. I'm Jane Lindholm. Thanks for listening.